The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Jane Ramsey, Executive Director of the Windy City Jewish Council on Urban Affairs and a leading figure in African-American Jewish dialogue and community action. We'll also have a visit from our Mevinah on Jewish Ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's a holiday of sorts today, but not one that we Jews really ought to celebrate. Of course, try telling that to your wife or girlfriend, or both, and see just how far that gets you. Of course, I'm referring to St. Valentine's Day, which has quite a colorful and distinctly goyish history. It began as the festival of Lupercalia, a pagan fertility holiday. I have been told by reasonably reliable authorities that this ancient Roman festival took place February 13th to the 15th each year. If classics professors are to be believed, young men would actually strip naked and use goat or dog skin whips to whack the backsides of young women to improve their fertility. I am not making this up. No record on whether this actually worked, by the way. If it did, you could save a lot of expense on fertility doctors today. Somehow, I suspect the pagan god of love, the Greek Eros, who became the Roman Cupid, was involved in this wild three-day festival, which seems to make Mardi Gras New Orleans look tame by comparison. Apparently, this inappropriately pagan celebration was Christianized over the course of several centuries. First, a guy named Valentine of Terni, a bishop, was martyred during the reign of the Emperor Aurelian in the year 197 by order of a Roman prefect with the oxymoronic name of Placid Furius. Supposedly, this Valentine died on February 14th. That was followed in the year 289. A priest named Valentine of Rome was martyred under the Emperor Claudius. Legend has it that while he was imprisoned, he either healed his jailer daughter's blindness or fell in love with her and sent her a note saying, "From your Valentine." Or perhaps that the Emperor Claudius forbid young men to marry so that they would make better soldiers, and the priest Valentine secretly carried out illegal Christian rites. In any case, he was supposedly martyred, again implausibly, on February 14th today. We do actually know that Pope Gelasius declared February 14th to be Valentine's Day, St. Valentine's Day, in the year 496. It was a way to take this still popular pagan festival of Lupercalia and tame it. Kind of an if you can't beat them with dog whips, then why not join them approach. Well, the next big development in Valentine's Day history came when the great English poet Geoffrey Chaucer of Canterbury Tales fame wrote his poem The Parliament of Fowls, which, while celebrating the engagement of Richard II of England and Anne of Bohemia, wrote, "For this was on St. Valentine's Day, when every fowl cometh there to choose his mate." Unfortunately, the day that Chaucer meant was May 2nd, when the engagement of King Richard and his bride-to-be was made, which was named, actually, May 2nd, for a different St. Valentine. But no matter, the French soon picked up the idea, and in 1400 they opened a high court of love in Paris to deal with affairs of the heart, marriages, divorces, infidelity, and the like. The first Valentine's Day note was penned in 1415 by Charles, Duke of Orleans, writing to his beloved while he sat in the Tower of London prison after having been captured at the Battle of Agincourt in 1415. Of course, in 1913, Hallmark started printing those cards, which are now the second most purchased postal item in the whole world. Chocolate, flowers, and of course jewelry came later and added great expense and continue to do so. Okay, so all of this Valentine's Day stuff is pretty distinctly un-Jewish, which is exactly what my friend Rabbi Joe Black is singing about.
Valentine's Day is not a Jewish holiday. That's why I didn't buy you flowers. I was thinking just of you. I know you're proud to be a Jew. It's a most confusing 24 hours. No, I can't be what I ain't. And a day named for a saint doesn't seem to be a kosher celebration. Oh, but when Purim comes, we'll nash on special heart-shaped Hamantaschen and drink Mulligan David wine for our libation. It's a Hallmark holiday, that is all that I can say. I don't know why you think it's so essential. Besides, at $80 a pop, a dozen roses ain't so high. What's the point of getting oh so sentimental? No, I didn't buy Godivas, 'cause the increase in your dress sizes from eating chocolate makes you weep and makes you wail. So open up the bedroom door, don't make me sleep here on the floor. I'll buy perfume for you next week when it's on sale.
What we really should be focusing on now is not Valentine's Day, but the coming fun holiday of Purim, which is also a little interesting in its origins. More about that next week. But at least Purim has definite Jewish elements and origins, like being based on the Book of Esther in the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible. Now, having said all that, you knew there had to be a Jewish angle about Valentine's Day somewhere, didn't you? The interesting thing about the days of the year that have Jewish romantic resonance, the festivals when young men and young women are supposed to find one another, it's always young men and women, isn't it? Well, those are pretty surprising in Jewish terms. The Mishnah, codified in the year 225, long before Valentine's Day became an official gig, actually quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in the tractate Ta'anit as saying that, "There were no better days for the people of Israel than the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur, since on these days the daughters of Israel go out dressed in white and dance in the vineyards." And what are they saying to the sons of Israel? "Young men, look up and consider whom you will choose for your wife." The Mishnah also explains that this was a time when all the women would dress the same, borrowing white dresses from each other so as not to appear distinctive, not bring shame upon those who were poorer, could not afford the finery of the richer, or the fancy roses that their boyfriends would give them. Now, there is something really fascinating about the Mishnah passage and the customs around it. The 2 days that are listed as Jewish versions of Valentine's Day, you know, but founded long before V-Day, the 2 days are Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, a fast day and the holiest day of the year, and the 15th of Av, just 6 days after the commemoration of the saddest events in Jewish history in the ancient world, the destruction of the first and second temples. So, first a word on the custom of young men and women pairing up on Yom Kippur afternoon. Apparently, in some ways, our ancestors were very similar to us. That is, today it's on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, that everyone who is going to be attending a Jewish religious service at any time that year will be found in the temple. It's why we need lots of extra seats and services on Yom Kippur to accommodate all the Jews who somehow don't go to shul the rest of the year, but choose to make an annual appearance on the Day of Atonement. I would bet that our biblical ancestors weren't so different. So they made that the time when young men and women could find appropriate mates, at services, when you were pretty sure members of the opposite sex were the same religion and similarly motivated. And if shidduchs were made then, if matches were created, you would have some confidence that there would be more generations of Jews to follow. The truth is, it still happens today. Every year on Yom Kippur, I, the rabbi, see good-looking, well-dressed young men and women, many of whom I have not seen in some time, come into the synagogue, some of them actually dressed in white for the festival, just as their ancestors were, And being on the bima at the front of the congregation, I can also see them check each other out during the powerful and pretty serious services we conduct. The only real difference is that our ancestors probably didn't text each other during the rituals of the ancient temple in Jerusalem. But I would bet that more than a few weddings have occurred that began with glances exchanged at Yom Kippur services at temple. Now, the second Jewish Valentine's Day of the year is also very interesting, and it's the one that's most observed in Israel today. From that same Mishnah, it's called Tu B'Av, the 15th day of the month of Av in midsummer, and it closely follows the somber day of Tisha B'Av when we recall the Churban, the destruction of the great temple in Jerusalem. Tu B'Av was considered a festive day. The restrictions on men and women associating freely were lifted. Young people were given to think about love and the hopefulness of life. In other words, it was a day dedicated to flirting and trying to find your soulmate. Interpretations of this Mishnah vary, but the overriding theme of joy and optimism has carried through to today. Through the years, Tu B'Av became a kind of minor symbol not only for romance but also hope. It has become a popular date today for weddings, both in Israel and even here in America. In recent years, Tu B'Av has morphed a little and gained significance as a day to celebrate love of all kinds. Dances and celebrations are held, people give flowers, gifts, and cards. I can't wait to see the Hallmark Tu B'Av card series in Hebrew. In any case, the idea that it's good to celebrate your love relationship is positive. I guess what I would urge all of you to think about is that these various midwinter celebrations are dedicated not to seeing what you can purchase for your significant other, but what you can say to them and do for them. The Ikar, the essence of the Jewish message, is one of real commitment to your wife or husband or significant other. And the way to show that is not necessarily based on the kind of card you purchase, the restaurant meal you pay for, or the gifts you give. It is based on how you live that commitment every day. Well, when we come back in a few minutes on this Valentine's Day, we'll meet our guest, Jane Ramsey, Executive Director of the Windy City Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, a pioneering group in African-American and Jewish relations and on civil rights issues. She'll be right here in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
The world's favorite family musical, a tradition for young and old. Fiddler on the Roof, starring Broadway's Theodore Bickel as Tevye. One of the most glowing creations in the history of musical theater, Fiddler on the Roof, starring the legendary Theodore Bickel as Tevye.
At the Tucson Music Hall, February 23rd to the 28th. Buy tickets at BroadwayInTucson.com.
I'm Edmund Marquez with the Edmund Marquez Insurance Agency. When was the last time you had a moment of truth with your auto or home insurance and needed your agent to make a claim? While we all hope we'll never need to use our auto or home insurance, if you do have something unexpected happen, would you rather call a 1-800 number or a friend who you can trust to see your claim through? My family has been helping Tucsonans navigate claims and protect their assets for over 40 years. Don't call an anonymous customer service agent. Call Edmund Marquez with the Edmund Marquez Insurance Agency for a personal touch and a reassuring helping hand. Stop by and see me at the Edmund Marquez Insurance Agency on Speedway, just west of Swan, or call us at 323-9333.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Jane Ramsey. Jane is the executive director of the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, which combats poverty, racism, and anti-Semitism in partnership with Chicago's diverse communities. Guided by prophetic Jewish principles, the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs pursues social and economic justice for Chicago's most vulnerable, promoting a vision of empowering communities from within. She has led the organization since 1979, and this year was named to the Forward 50 of the most important and interesting Jews in America. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Okay, so first of all, what does it feel like to be, you know, so important?
Deeply appreciated. Deeply appreciative of the honor and the recognition. And I think what really comes to mind is an appreciation for the sort of a light being shined on the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs. And it's going on 50 years. And I think that that's that you and I are talking so that JCUA can have a broader audience and really reach out and make connections. And that's really the importance, and that is very important.
One of the issues that you guys have taken on is the agriprocessors, the kosher meat scandal that has been such an awful story. We've been covering it on 2Jewish for the last several years. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in that.
Well, following the raid in May 2008, the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, in partnership with Jewish Community Action in Minneapolis, St. Paul, really galvanized a very large number of Jews from across the country. We had 1,500 Jews come, really to show support and solidarity both with the workers from agriprocessors, many of whom had been deported and their families left behind, as well as to the community. So there was this double issue of the worker injustice that agriprocessors very sadly, tragically represented, and the broken immigration system. We after we galvanized and had the very large turnout and really a march with faith leaders and community leaders in Postville in 2008. Since then, we've been working on the ground with the leaders to first deal with the humanitarian issues, getting people food and resources, and making sure that they had a shelter, roof above their heads. So that was our immediate concern, legal services, and then going forward to work on a community benefits agreement with the faith and community leaders in Postville, and which we're working on today to hopefully ensure that AgriStar, the new company,
doesn't make the same mistakes. We will talk much more with Jane Ramsey, our guest here on 2Jewish, when we come back in just a few moments.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org.
Looking for a unique dining experience with menu selections made from scratch from the freshest ingredients? The Beeline, located at 621 North 4th Avenue, sets a new precedent with high-quality food and beverages in a counter-service setting. This blend has earned the Beeline the Best Casual Dining Award from Tucson Weekly 5 times, from their perfectly spiced mahi fish tacos to their popular pasta dishes featuring vodka, pesto, or traditional Italian red sauce. You are sure to find something perfect for your taste. tastes. Try their scrumptious dessert selection, carefully prepared from scratch by their talented pastry chef. Enjoy wines by the glass or bottle, microbrew, craft beers, or on tap. The Beeline, 621 North 4th Avenue. Stop by or call 882-7575. Visit their retail location, Time Market on University Boulevard near 4th Ave, with a great selection of over 300 different wines and 100 beers and gourmet foods to go. Call 882-7575 for the Beeline and Time Market. Unique casual dining experiences.
All day long I bitty bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to wear a...
The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's Purim on the Roof, a wonderful parody of Fiddler on the Roof, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs on all the classic songs of Fiddler, and featuring a Tevye like you've never seen before. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, and fabulous food. Plus, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for information. Come one, come all, to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona. All at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of all past and present shows through the website or downloading us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Well, the raucous, extremely fun Festival of Purim is coming up fast. Our own Purim Extravaganza show is next Sunday morning, February 21st at Temple Emmanuel at 10 a.m. Don't miss it. And the Megillah reading is Saturday night, February 27th. To get us ready for Purim as part of our pre-Purim musical play-in, here's the wonderful Sephardic Purim song Empezar a Contar from Sarajevo, telling the story of the Book of Esther in music. That was the terrific Sephardic music group, The Voice of the Turtle, singing Empezar a Contar for Purim. We welcome our expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Lenrand. Good morning, Amy, and happy Valentine's Day.
Well, good morning, Rabbi, and the same to you and yours.
Thank you. Happy Saint Valentine's Day, I might add. But anyway, you know, this is a holiday dedicated to romantic love, which means for Jews, the notion really of beshert, someone
yes.
that we're meant to be with.
the concept of love and Besharet, I think, are a beautiful concept. We don't really need to have a saint to articulate them, because I think, you know, the whole concept of Ahavat Yisrael, I mean, the love of the people of Israel, the love of the stranger, the love of our neighbor, it's very, very much a part of our culture and our values. But the kind of love we're talking about now, the romantic love and the idea of having someone who is your soulmate, the Besharet, is also a beautiful notion. And, you know, I think that one of the things that Judaism is doing well right now is expanding certain definitions. The definition of the Jewish family has expanded enormously from the, you know, the very 50s definition of a Jewish family meant a mother, a father, and children. Sometimes a dog, but only if it didn't shed. And then there's the new definition of Jewish family, which includes sometimes two mothers, sometimes two fathers, sometimes, you know, a mother and children, and we still...
And still the dog that doesn't shed.
And still the dog that doesn't shed. So I think we've been pretty good linguistically at expanding that definition. But that definition is only going to really be, I think, a useful one if we also work to expand the definition of what love is and what a loving soulmate is. And I think, again, you know, Judaism has been very, I would say, actually revolutionary, not evolutionary in this, that the whole notion of what a loving, fulfilling relationship is, at least in both through the lens of both the Reform, the Reconstructionist, and then more recently the conservative movements, has, you know, really embraced the notion that same-sex partners, same-sex love, gay, lesbian, transgender relationships can all have a place and a home within the Jewish tradition.
That they can all be beshared.
That's right. And I also think that it's very important to say that a beshared doesn't have to be a person. You know, let's say someone is a splendid human being and living a very Jewish life and never finds that special soulmate. And, you know, is that person destined to live a, quote, loveless life? And I think the answer is definitely not. Of course that person can live a very enriched and loving and love-filled life. And perhaps that love, that Besharet, will be fulfilled by a study partner, a teacher. And this is the kind of love that's not perhaps physical, but it's more of a spiritual love, a love that really elevates the soul. And so that kind of soulmate can also be seen as a Besharet, even if it's not a physical partner.
Powerful idea, and a good one. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, and I hope you have a very loving day.
You too. Happy St. Valentine's Day.
Thanks.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant in the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Well, the best way to find out about the best restaurants in Southern Arizona is to go to the website. It's www.janos.com. What's on there?
Well, that's what I want to direct people to this morning. On our website, we've got all of our wine dinners. We've got all of our specials. If you go to the website and opt in, we will send you an e-blast every week telling you all of the things that we're doing. We've got all sorts of wine dinners scheduled. We've got music coming up in the summer. We've got just fun menu things that change all the time. We'll let you know every week what's going on. Just go to the website, opt in, and you'll get an e-blast from us.
And cooking classes, too. My wife takes those.
The cooking classes, not to mention the cooking classes.
For really the best restaurant site in all of Arizona, www.janos.com. But people can also call you, can't they?
Just give us a call, 615-6100.
All day long, I bitty, bitty, bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard.
The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's Purim on the Roof, a wonderful parody of Fiddler on the Roof, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs on all the classic songs of Fiddler, and featuring a Tevye like you've never seen before. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, and fabulous food. Plus, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for information. Come one, come all, to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona. All at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, we've been comparing Mediterranean countries that were part of the Roman Empire long ago and the Jewish communities there. We talked about Greece a couple weeks ago, moved from Greece and compared it to Italy a little bit. Spain has a very interesting and revived, really almost kind of a renaissance or a brand new sort of fresh Jewish community. I happened to meet the president of the Spanish Federation of Jewish Synagogues, and there's some 47 synagogues going on in Spain these days. Let's talk about Spanish Jewish community.
Right. Well, Spain is a remarkable case because Jewish history there has always been a yo-yo of extremes. During Roman times, Jews prospered. Then when the Goths came and destroyed the Roman Empire and the Visigothic and Ostrogothic kingdoms, and Spain treated Jews very harshly. And then Spain was conquered by the Muslims in 711, and shortly thereafter began the period known as the Golden Age of Spain, where Jews and Muslims were sort of co-rulers, and there was a real flowering of a very special civilization that to this very day makes some true dyed-in-the-wool Sephardim think that they're much better than any other Jews around.
Of course.
No matter whether they live in Rochester, New York, or Istanbul, Turkey, or Sofia, Bulgaria, they definitely consider themselves a cut above because of that glorious period of 300 or 400 years when they were ministers and prime ministers and ambassadors and all that.
And generals and poets and
right.
So on, right?
So then, you know, there was the long, slow process of the Reconquista where the Catholics retook their country, which was immediately followed by the Spanish Inquisition, and Jews were at least officially and theoretically completely expelled from Spain so that there were no Jews left.
In 1492.
Right. And at that point, Jewish history in Spain was widely thought to have ended because there were no overt signs of Jewish life, Jewish communities, Jewish structures like synagogues, schools, cemeteries, whatever. And that continued through the time of Generalissimo Franco, in the 20th century. And then Spain began to emerge from its ashes. Ashes, by the way, caused by a different kind of religious war between the Catholics and the Protestants. Spain basically bankrupted itself in the Spanish Armada, in which it was defeated at the end of the 16th century, and it became a third-rate, poor country, barely able to hold on to most of its colonies. And, you know, it wasn't an attractive place for Jews to live, even if they'd been allowed to. But somehow, in the last quarter of the 20th century, as Spain reemerged as the great dynamic cultural, economic, financial center that it has become in the context of the European Union, Jews started moving back, or closet Jews started coming out of the closet. And there's been a widespread revival of Jewish life. I mean, sort of from the ashes, you know, and as somebody pointed out to me recently, this includes like Ashkenazic Jews from Eastern Europe who went after the Holocaust to South America and have now found it convenient to move to Spain, which was never their homeland in particular, but they've learned the language and they feel at home there, and it's more dynamic and more attractive than most places in Latin America. So what we have in Spain is essentially a new Jewish community that's emerged within the past generation, and it's, you know, quite a remarkable turn in Jewish history that we have this emerging, young, vibrant Jewish community in a country that was thought to be truly Judenrein.
Fascinating and very interesting place. Can't wait to visit and see some of those communities. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Little David comes home from first grade and tells his dad that they learned about the history of Valentine's Day. Since Valentine's Day is celebrated for a Christian saint and we're Jewish, he asks, will God get mad at me for giving somebody else a Valentine? David's father thinks and says, no, I don't think God would get mad. Who do you want to give a Valentine to? Osama bin Laden, David says. Why Osama bin Laden? His father asks. Well, David says, I thought if a little American Jewish boy could have enough love to give Osama a Valentine, he might start to think that maybe we're not all bad and maybe start loving people a little bit. And if other kids saw what I did and sent Valentines to Osama, he'd love everybody a lot, and then he'd start going all over the place and tell everyone how much he loved them and how he didn't hate anyone anymore. His father's heart swells, and he looks at his boy with newfound pride and says, David, that's the most wonderful thing I've ever heard. I know, David says. And once that gets him out in the open, the Marines can shoot him. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. We now welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. It's a time of the year when people are talking a lot about love and soulmates, and I wanted to tell a rather disturbing story about soulmates from the Jewish tradition. It goes like this. There was a tradition amongst the Hasidim that everyone had a soulmate, not a soulmate for this world, but a soulmate who you would pair up with in heaven, in the world to come, ha'olam haba, and you would study Torah together in the afterlife, and that was your soulmate. And it happened that one morning, the Baal Shem Tov woke up from his sleep, and he remembered a dream where he vividly saw who his soulmate was, and it was this enormous, big man. And the Baal Shem Tov was rather struck by this. And in the coming nights, when he dreamed of this man again and again, this very fat man, that this man was his soulmate, the Baal Shem Tov was really curious, and he decided that he needed to look a little further to find who this man was in this world, because of all people, the Baal Shem Tov could do such a thing. And so he managed to use his intuition to eventually track this man down in a town not too far away. And the Baal Shem Tov showed up at his door, and as he knocked on the door, the man didn't even get up to open it. Instead, he just called the Baal Shem Tov in. And when the Baal Shem Tov entered, he saw the man was just sitting there at a table and eating and eating and eating and eating. And the Baal Shem Tov couldn't understand how this man, who was so clearly given over to his appetites, to his desires, would be fit to be the soulmate of the Besht himself, this great rabbi. So the Baal Shem Tov asked for his story. And the man, between mouthfuls of various foods, said to him, you know, my father was traveling through the streets, through the old dusty roads of Eastern Europe. And as he was going one day, a band of Cossacks, anti-Semitic Cossacks, caught him. And they tied him up to a stake, and through their anti-Semitism, they burned him at the stake. And my father, he was a small man. And very soon, the burning was over before anyone could even come to help or even to notice. And when I heard what had happened, I vowed that day that I would not be like my father. If the Cossacks catch me, I cannot change that. But the one thing I can change is that when they try to burn me at the stake, I won't go easily. I am so big, I will burn for a long, long time. And people will hear, and people will come. And they will not only see that there is a Jew burning, they will see it is not so easy to get rid of the Jews.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story from you next week. And now a word of Torah. This week in Temple, we read the portion of Truma, as the book of Exodus moves from practical laws to ritual ones, the plans for the creation of the tabernacle in the wilderness, first site of national worship, and for the building of the Ark of the Covenant are explained and detailed. In order to create the new central shrine for prayer, the place which God's presence will actually inhabit, Moses calls on the people of Israel to donate materials from the best of what they have, what comes to be called a truma offering. And a remarkable thing happens. When the people are asked to donate gifts to build the holy structures needed to worship God, they come forward immediately and give much more than is required. Moses has to ask the Israelites to stop bringing so much gold and silver and so many precious fabrics. This marks the first and only time in history when a temple building campaign brought in more than was asked for or required. May it happen again sometime soon, maybe even here in these trying times. In any case, the word for this experience is truma, freewill offering, a gift to God out of the goodness of the heart. This generous offering is a powerful idea indeed, for when it is constructed, the tabernacle in the wilderness, built from such free generosity, immediately fills with God's presence. May it be so for us, when we learn to give freely of ourselves to those causes and those people we believe in. When we come back on Two Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and talk to Jane Ramsey, who's doing the most interesting things going on today that involve the African-American and Jewish communities in America. She'll be here when we come back on Two Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary. Israeli archaeologists have unearthed a section of a stone street in Jerusalem that provides important new evidence about the city's commercial life a millennium and a half ago. The 19-foot section of the street passes from the west into the center of Jerusalem's old city, coming to a stop at a large cistern that supplied water to the city's residents 1,500 years ago. Pottery, coins, and bronze weights used to measure precious metals from Byzantine times were found at the site. The discovery conforms to the layout of the city depicted in a mosaic map discovered in a Jordanian church in Madaba some time ago. The map, a replica of which is on a wall in the Cardo shopping street in the old city, has long been used as a guide to understanding the shape of the city during the 4th through the 6th centuries, and the discovery of the street proves the map is correct. This street was the center during the most commercially successful period in the history of ancient Jerusalem, said excavation director Ofer Sion of the Israel Antiquities Authority. It is wonderful that today's street actually preserved the route of the noisy road from 1,500 years ago. Working from this historic map, archaeologists 3 months ago uncovered the section of the street 14 feet below the street level. The map from a Byzantine-era church in Madaba shows the locations of major streets and the Christian sites in the city, including the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the site where the faithful believe Jesus was buried. Once restoration work is complete, within just a few weeks, this segment of street will be covered because of heavy pedestrian traffic. Also in Israel, a conservative synagogue was damaged by arson last week. The fire set at the Shir Hadashah synagogue in Arad in the Negev scorched the outside of the building but was put out before it damaged the interior.
The attack comes a year after another attempt to burn down this synagogue and just days after an attempted break-in. There are 60 conservative synagogues in Israel. Shir Hadashah is the only non-Orthodox synagogue in the city of Arad. Police have no suspects. I suspect the arsonists are young, male, and ultra-Orthodox. The Jewish Federations of North America, I think that's the name chosen by the Federation movement last year, third name change in a decade for the umbrella Jewish fundraising organization. Anyway, the Jewish Federations last week moved their annual conference this year, the one that's coming up in November, from Orlando to New Orleans. No doubt this was a move designed to capitalize on the popularity of the Saints' victory in the Super Bowl. Anyway, in its continuing, increasingly desperate quest to remain relevant, the once powerful Federation organization outlined five new priorities for its future. Perhaps the most important of them is as follows. We know we need to create a pipeline of talent both from within and outside of our federations, said Kathy Manning, Jewish Federation's top lay leader. We want to make sure we are creating a culture where federations become the place to be in the Jewish community. That's funny. I always thought the place that people should be in the Jewish community was a synagogue, where Jews pray and study and celebrate life cycle events and educate their children, or perhaps the JCC, where Jews work out, not the Federation, where Jews go to lots of meetings and talk about how important it is to raise money. But that's just me, I'm sure. You know, a rabbi would be out of touch with real Jewish priorities, like keeping the dying husk of the Federation movement thriving so it can keep giving out awards to its volunteers and hiring bureaucrats. In happier news, tourism in Israel experienced a record month in January. 212,000 tourists arrived. It's the highest January total ever, a 62% increase over 2009, and the herald of what looks like a great year for Israel tourism. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish This Morning, Jane Ramsey. She is the executive director of the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, which combats poverty, racism, and anti-Semitism, partnering with Chicago's diverse communities. Guided by Jewish principles, the JCUA, Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, pursues social and economic justice in the Chicagoland area, particularly the vulnerable neighborhoods. She's led it since 1979, and she works to address problems on behalf of human and civil rights issues, homelessness, community displacement, immigration, a variety of important ethical and really Jewishly ethical topics. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Immigration has been a very important issue, obviously, nationally. It's a big issue here in Southwest Tucson, Arizona, where I live. You've been active in this. There was a big push at Pesach to try to get some kind of comprehensive immigration reform. John McCain's been involved. Lots of people have been involved. What do you think the practical possibilities are? What can people do to try to spur some change in immigration policy?
Well, first of all, we... along with the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs, Jewish Community Action, together with HIAS,
Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, I should say.
Yes, created the Jewish Campaign for Comprehensive Immigration Reform, and our Progress by Pesach campaign, which culminated last Pesach with a press conference on the Hill with Jewish congressmen and a meeting with the White House aides, really demonstrated the Jewish voice. In partnership with so many other faith communities across the country, and commitment to comprehensive immigration reform. And that campaign, we were joined by 20 other national and local Jewish organizations. So I think it's very critical that we as Jews remember our past as an immigrant community and our investment in seeing this broken immigration system, as you've articulated, as it affects your community. Change. And we are hopeful that we have received both privately and publicly statements and commitments to comprehensive immigration reform. We now have a bill that Congressman Gutierrez introduced in December, and Senators Schumer and Graham are working right now in the Senate on a bipartisan bill. So this is a tough issue, and we know it's a tough issue. On the other hand, there is a lot of momentum, And I think there's an understanding from the Obama administration that that this is a central and deep concern of a broad range of people across the country. It's a top issue for us.
Sure, I understand. How do you define the issues that you choose to engage in? What Jewish values underlie those choices?
JCUA, which was founded in 1964, really out of the civil rights movement, and really based on our prophetic tradition of for justice. Demanding and obligating us as Jews to work for a just world. And Maimonides urges us to help people help themselves, and we listen to that. So undergirding all of JCUA's work is our commitment to prophetic Judaism, and also understanding that a just world is a safer world.
When you choose an issue, how do you bring people together? How do you design the campaign? What's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing we do is again, we're working in communities, whether we're working with public housing residents at Cabrini Green, or if we're working with the Latino community in Chicago of Pilsen. And so much of what we do, first, is we hear, we listen. Secondly, if we understand, we are requested oftentimes, we only go into a community if we're invited in. And so if a community address says that our most severe issue is one of lack of housing, then we work with them. We work with local community organizations to say, okay, what are the solutions? And hear their solutions. And then work in partnership to address them. So in the issue of housing, for example, we'll work on both a local community organizing level, community development level, and policy level. So on the community development level, JCUA has helped community not-for-profit community development corporations renovate or build 2,700 units of housing for very low-income families. We have worked to create coalitions that are looking at policy issues. What can we do at the state level? What can we do at the national level? What can we do at the local level? So it's really listening, working in partnership, bringing people from many different backgrounds together to make change.
It was a big year last year for community organizers. One of them became inaugurated president of the United States, also a Chicago community organizer, President Obama. You didn't become president of the United States, but
no.
You did get to go to the White House.
I did. And many people have it. I mean, I think it's a great progress that we have someone in the White House who understands community, who cares about community, who really knows how to bring people together, who's interested in bringing groups together across lines. So as most folks in Chicago were appreciative that we have someone who we know can hear. It doesn't mean that we're moving as fast or that the country's moving as fast as any of us want it to on so many of these social issues. But it does mean that we know that we have an ear in the White House, and there's almost no activist in Chicago who doesn't who doesn't have some access. So we, along with the thousands of others, have buttons that we can or want to push or hope we can push.
I want to thank Jane Ramsey for a fine visit here on Too Jewish. Her organization is called the Jewish Council on Urban Affairs. You can find out more about it from their website.
www.jcua.org.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
All day long, I bitty, bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard.
The most thoroughly fun Jewish holiday of all is coming to Temple Emmanuel in the greatest show yet. Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m., the Purim Extravaganza Show and Spectacular Carnival will make this fabulously fun festival into a wonderful celebration for all ages. It's Purim on the Roof, a wonderful parody of Fiddler on the Roof, exploring the story of the Book of Esther in full musical theater style, including takeoffs on all the classic songs of Fiddler, and featuring a Tevye like you've never seen before. It's a Purim day filled with comedy, clowning, magic, games, and fabulous food. Plus, don't miss the finest hamantaschen in all of Arizona. Everyone's invited, and the Purim show and carnival are absolutely free. Call 327-4501 for information. Come one, come all, to the biggest and best Purim celebration in Arizona. All at Temple Emmanuel, Sunday, February 21st at 10 a.m. Call 327-4501 for Purim Extravaganza Fun for adults and children.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be the famed actor and singer Theodore Bekel, featured in the touring company of Fiddler on the Roof for one last hurrah. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our pre-Purim musical preview. It's called Mishenichnas Adar. When we enter the month of Adar, we multiply joy, from cantor Paul Zim. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Mishem, 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 Nichnas Adar. Mishem, 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 Nichnas Adar.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.